I'm Paul Varag, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. With the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 436, June 24th, 2010. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Cameron Karting, the proud organizer and sponsor of the 2010 Red Line Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers all kinds of parts for your karts. Check them out, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, Pirelli wins the F1 contract. The FIA bring back the 107% rule. Adjustable rear rings, what's next? And of course, Motorsports Mondial with Nasser Hamid and a special interview with Paul Valhaug, a GP3 up-and-coming race driver from Norway. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers, and yourself?
Wow! Pow! We got Pirelli, Michelin is out. We've got adjustable rear wings, no more adjustment for the front wings, and we've got rules, including the old 107% rule, which is back, and the new team next year will be able to fall within the limits.
Yeah, my only question to that limit would be, what happens if you're unable to set a time in the first session due to mechanical failure or an off-track incident? Does that mean you're, hey, no time? See you next week.
Well, not necessarily. They'll also take into account your times from practice.
Yeah,
if something happens and you don't make it into qualifying in Q1.
It might also have something to do, too, with your teammate's time. If your teammate is able to qualify, they'll figure that your car is able to qualify, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and there's some really great stuff in here. This is one of my favorites right here. It's under general safety. It says, with immediate effect, any car being, which means this starts now,
yep.
Valencia. Any car being driven unnecessarily slowly, erratically, or which is deemed potentially dangerous to other drivers will be reported to the stewards. This will apply whether any such car is being driven on the track, the pit entry, or the pit lane, Stephen.
Ooh. Fernando. Lewis. You better watch out.
I don't know what it means, but one of my other ones, there's a number of immediate effects.
Do they say anything about what, is it penalties or is it black flag? Or?
Well, no, they're just going to report it to the stewards. The stewards will talk to whoever the race former Formula One driver will be as a associate steward, and they'll, have cocktails and come up with some kind of conclusion.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Send that man a jigger of martinis.
Here's another one. This has to do with the safety car, and I believe this is the result of the Fernando Schumacher
of Rosskast 2.
Exactly. It's funny, Schumacher comes back, and we've already got
new rules just for him.
So anyway, with immediate effect, no car may overtake until it has passed the first safety car line for the first time when the safety car is returning to the pits. However, if the safety car is still deployed at the beginning of the last lap or is deployed during the last lap, it will enter the pit lane at the end of the lap and the cars will take the checkered flag as normal without Mr. Schumacher overtaking.
Yeah, basically, if the safety car is out on the last lap, that's the finished order, baby. It's not changing.
So pretty exciting stuff. Let's go right to the 107% rule. And this is not to immediate effect, of course. This will start for the next season in 2011. Any driver whose best qualifying lap exceeds 107% of the fastest Q1 qualifying time will not be allowed to take part in the race. But under exceptional circumstances, which may include setting a suitable lap time in a free practice session, the stewards may permit the car to start the race. Should there be more than one driver accepted in this manner, the grid order will be determined by the stewards, which means Ferrari first, McLaren second.
All the others by lot.
Exactly. So it's great stuff. Of course, from now we're going to an adjustable rear wing, which means basically that the F-duck is unnecessary. And
well, not necessarily.
No, but F-duck is outlawed. But the adjustability, what is really, it's a blown rear wing. The blown rear wing made the rear wing less effective in terms of drag.
Stalled it and made it no downforce, less drag.
Correct. So,
did they say what the amount of adjustability is going to be? Is it going to be the same? Crummy little 6% it was for the front wing or whatever.
I don't think it's going to be more than 6 to 7 degrees. Seriously.
Yeah.
That's about all they gave to the front wing, which can be fairly effective.
Yeah. It can be helpful. I don't know. And actually, the rear wing is probably makes more sense because the back ends of the cars, at least these newer cars, that's been the problem. Is basically you've got to have enough downforce to keep those back tires on the track, but then it slows you down in the straights. A kind of catch 22 classic aero problem.
Okay, and my final FIA fuel adjustment new rules for
refueling's back.
Well, no, this is another with immediate effect. So there's a number of rules here that are, you know, now, and I think a lot of people aren't paying attention. But with immediate effect, this is about fuel. If a sample of fuel is required after a practice, the car concerned must have first been driven back to the pits under its own "don't get out of the car and push it" Lewis Hamilton power.
Interesting.
Exactly. Very, very interesting. So there you go. And of course, we have to mention that Ho Ping Tung has been given a temporary 4-race probationary super license. So that means Petrov, watch it.
Yeah, Petrov better. You're saying you like Valencia, prove it.
Yes, so there you have it. Very interesting stuff. But and of course, the topper is Pirelli being chosen, which doesn't surprise me. I don't think, I might have my facts wrong. I don't believe Pirelli's been in Formula One. The last time was 1991. And of course, a lot of people are already saying that Pirelli, Ferrari, Peroni, you know, it's all going to be one big Italian pasta family.
Well, I think basically Michelin probably didn't come on board because Michelin couldn't get the deal they wanted as far as, you know, the compensation required, you know.
Yeah, they didn't
really
want
to give it for free. I'm sure Pirelli's not doing it completely for free, but it's probably doing it for less. And maybe Pirelli's got a little bit of an in considering they are the tire supplier for WRC.
Correct.
So,
which is really not comparable. I mean, we're talking studded tires.
Well, completely different animal kind of tire. Basically, it's treaded versus slick, period. So,
but unlike a lot of people, I think Pirelli will be fine. I think they'll build a tire just as good as Bridgestone.
Can't be any better. I don't think it'll be. Can't be any worse. You know, and maybe they'll actually be better. Maybe they'll have more consistent compounds.
Well, the problem is they don't want. See, everybody is saying that Canada is the way it should be, where you have really terrible tires to spice up the racing.
Yeah, you have one pair of tires that last 3 laps, and then is a problem, and then the other one's hard enough that you could theoretically run the whole race on it if you had to.
Yeah, because don't forget, the first race in Bahrain, everybody cried and whined, including moi. about how boring this season could be, and then look at Canada, how exciting it was.
Right.
So.
Well, there was something in this whole shebang that they were going to really stretch the distance between the tires for Hockenheim.
They are.
For the German Grand Prix, just to kind of get that kind of something, you know, basically give that, see if they can get that kind of race again.
Exactly. So, and obviously I think that's going to guarantee Canada coming back on the calendar for 2011. But great stuff, of course. There's also other things in the news, and another favorite of mine was Ferrari. They did, you can't call it, they did, Fernando was driving the F10 around Scuderia's, Ferrari's Fiorano test track. They called it a media day because they said they were filming for some kind of project.
Commercials and things.
Well, but secretly, they were testing the new lowered exhaust system that's similar to Red Bull's, which McLaren will come out with at Silverstone. And a lot of people are thinking that Ferrari is cheating the testing ban rules.
Ferrari?
Is that Ferrari a cheat? I mean, I was
any stunned. Any team in Formula One cheat? They're all paragons of virtue. Come on.
I'm telling you, it was a shock to me. And
didn't somebody else test this week too?
This is what they said. Fernando did a few laps at the track, at the wheel of the F10, for promotional purposes only. Filming, not only for partners of the Reds, but also for some novel features which will soon enliven the new section of the Ferrari website. So there you go.
Convenient way to get some laps, I suppose.
Even though the only completed very few kilometers, further limited by the demands of the film script. So see, this was all for media, Steve. There was no testing, but they just happened to choose the car with the new Red Bull exhaust system.
Yeah, you know, they couldn't have used last year's car.
You know what? Let people test. Yeah, FIA needs to deal with this.
I tend to agree with you. Frankly, the test ban kind of leads to boring races.
Because yes.
There's no development, especially for the poor new teams who really need to get track time to find their problems.
Not only that.
What fun is it to have Lotus come out and have both cars dead after the third lap?
Yeah, that's not cool. Not only that, but everybody without testing comes out super conservative.
Yeah.
We're afraid to do anything because they haven't tested it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Basically, everybody uses practice now for testing. The teams want to test. They want to blow the money for testing. Let them blow the money for testing.
I know. And this was Max Mosley's issue. Nobody else's, to be honest with you. I think everybody should go back to some testing. Because it's good for the young driver development. It's absolutely necessary. So I'm not surprised that, you know, and they're not the only ones. McLaren will be doing some straight line testing for Silverstone with the new Red Bull type of...
with the low exhaust.
Yes, exactly. So... I don't know. You know, there's some more rules that need to be changed, but still, I think it's great. I love Formula One, and I'm having a great season.
It's been a lot more. It's been a lot of fun, considering how how scared everybody was after Bahrain, because Bahrain. But you know, frankly, that was 80% track.
Yeah, and no, and it's exciting. Valencia. Now, Valencia, we've seen some boring races there.
It's not a really good track for racing, necessarily.
Well, we'll see what happens.
See what happens this time through.
I'm keeping an open mind, but Red Bull Racing, they are bringing back the F-Duck system for the European Grand Prix at Valencia.
Hmm, interesting. There really aren't, you know, Valencia is not one of those tracks where you've got a lot of high-speed opportunities.
Well, this is what they say. Having not raced it in Turkey, the team decided against even trying it in practice in Canada. With technical chief Adrian Newey also choosing to stay away for the Montreal weekend.
Are there warrants for his arrest in Canada or something?
No, I don't know, but he wasn't there. Further,
Canada would have been a track for F-Duct. You get, you know, the two really long straights in Canada.
Well, we'll see what's going to happen. So, because, you know, people are starting to catch up. Obviously, McLaren is really catching up with Red Bull. And now, even though they won't have it at Valencia, McLaren will have the lowered exhaust in Silverstone. And, of course, Ferrari will have the lowered exhaust this weekend. So we'll see what a big step forward that will be for Fernando Alonso and his number two partner, Felipe Massa.
See if it makes a difference for him. You know, exhaust position, yeah, maybe some improvement in airflow across the lower elements in the rear wing. But
well, not only that, but it helps with the rear rear diffuser, which I think gives it a blown diffuser.
There's a lot of things going on down there, Steve. If you had it directed properly.
This isn't your grandma's Corvair. So we'll see what happens, but I think Ferrari will make a bit of a step forward, and I expect Ferrari to be on the podium, including Robert Kubica.
Ooh.
Exactly. My predictions so far this weekend.
So when's Renault lowering their exhaust?
They don't need to.
Oh, they don't?
Anyway, quickly, Pat Fry, formerly of McLaren, been at McLaren for a number of years.
Isn't he a Toyota before that?
No, that's somebody else, Steven. No. That was...
probably Gascoigne as well.
No, that was the Fryer, where they did the spring rolls.
Ah.
Thank you, Steven. Pat Fry has left... McLaren, and I thought he was retiring, but now he will be at Ferrari Scuderia. So it's going to be Pirelli, Pat Fry, and Ferrari.
I already see the espionage headlines coming up in the next 3 weeks. You know, Pat Fry takes drawings with
engineers go back and forth, but Whitmar said last month that he was confident this team would not be hurt by Fry's exit. He's been with the company for about 18 years. He's made a great contribution over the years, blah, 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 blah.
And I'm sure that they had people groomed to take that slot kind of thing.
Of course.
McLaren's got so many quality engineers.
Yes. And so there you have it. I'm sure you'll have... And it's always good to bring some fresh blood. Sometimes it's good to leave one company, go to a new company. It's good for you. It's good for them.
Yep.
So good for Mr. Fry. I hope everything works out. But I'm looking forward to this weekend because... the last Grand Prix I was at. So finally back to the television, and we'll see how this is going to be great. Looking forward to it, even though I am excited because I did get tickets to another Grand Prix.
Woohoo!
And I'm not going to tell anybody where or when, but it's exciting, and we might even have a F1 weekly meeting, so I'm putting it together, and it's going to be fun. I'll give you a clue. Lots of pasta. So there you have it. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Motorsports Mondial, and don't forget the interview with Paul Valhaug, of course, the Norwegian up-and-coming race driver that's in the GP3 series right now. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, this is Steve with F1Weekly.com. Our podcasts are brought to you by Google AdSense and the Firefox web browser. The innovative Firefox browser makes surfing the web faster and safer with the included Google toolbar and features like autofill and spell check. It will make your browsing more convenient. Together, they'll change the way you surf the internet for free. Just click on the button on our homepage.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid.
Mark Webber in rather mischievous mood there. What do you think he's going to be like as a teammate, Sebastian?
He will be definitely difficult to understand. And hopefully, I hope that at the end of next year, I won't be walking through the paddock and say, no problem, mate. Thanks, mate.
Greetings and racing regards, mate. Hope you're having a fair dinkum day. And that was Sebastian Vettel in happier days on his relationship with teammate from Land Down Under. Now that the heat is on and the cage is rattling, the friendship has turned into acquaintanceship. That's how it goes.
I've heard about these strained relationships.
Yeah, not so long ago. Yes. Today we have action from Manicur, Zolder, Silverstone and Sears Point. And after Motorsports Mondial, we have an interview with Mr. Paul Varhaug, racing driver from Norway and winner of the first ever GP3 race. First, we waffle away to Belgium for Formula 2 action from Zolder. Dean Stoneman of England was the winner in race 1 from pole position. Local driver Benjamin Bailey was the winner of the second race. In the championship, Jolyon Palmer, son of Dr. Jonathan Palmer, who is also the person organizing this series, he is leading with 139 points over Dean Stoneman, who is on 131 points. Philip Eng of Austria is third with 80 points. And this is one of those interesting situations. Philip Eng, some years ago, won the Formula BMW World Finals, and with that you get a F1 drive. And he was, his star was shining pretty bright. But now he is, yodeling in the canyon in the Formula 2 world. Amazing how these things go.
You think Formula 2 is going to make it another season?
You know, I've been thinking about that myself. It's really has not, I mean, you need some big names. And I was talking to Martin Brundle at the Barcelona airport. His kid was in Formula 2 last year, and now he's in F3. So I asked him why you took your son out. He said, because I want my son to work with an engineer and a mechanic and a team rather than, you know, just have a car prepared by one person or one organization for everybody. So they want, you know, this series does not give you the...
doesn't really give you the racing experience.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, there's a time and slot for this series, and I just am very surprised. If you look at the... I mean, funny you ask this. There are three drivers in this series from India. There are drivers from Latvia and Angola, but they don't have a single driver from North or South America. What does that tell you? If you don't have a Brazilian in your series, you have a problem. It's
or
simple
South American,
that.
Period.
Yeah. Nobody from Canada. Last year, Robert Wickens was there. Nobody from Canada, nobody from U.S., nobody from Mexico or rest of it. That's kind of strange, huh?
It is.
But let's hope, you know, we are racing fans. We like all series. Let's hope it stays there and grows. But I'll tell you, in the 60s and 70s, Formula 2 was so strong that several Formula 1 drivers were champions.
Well, Formula 2 was basically GP3. Well, or GP2, I mean.
Yeah.
Back in the day. What GP2 is now. It was, you know, it was a full-blown series.
Well, Formula 1 drivers used to race in that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how...
Jimmy Clark.
Yeah, that's how Jochen Rindt, Jackie Stewart... Yeah, so in those days, if you won a championship in Formula 2, I mean, you were going to Formula 1 straight away.
Serious consideration from the Formula 1 teams.
Yeah. Okay, now we go down south to France, Manicourt, a World Series by Renault. Saturday race was won by Russian driver Mikhail Aleshin, his third victory of the season. Esteban Guerrieri of Argentina was second, and Stefano Coletti of Monaco was third. Second race of the weekend on Sunday was won by Nathaniel Berton of France over Daniel Ricciardo of Australia. And once again, you know, you see Daniel Ricciardo in the top two or three, but you don't see Mr. Brandon Hartley, which is always a surprise, and he really needs to get going. If Ricciardo wins this championship, then he left two strikes against him. He lost to Alguersuari in the British Championship. They were teammates, same sponsor, Red Bull. And I'm a fan of Brendan Hartley because he's a quick driver, so I'd like to see him do well. Silverstone, pole position and victory for Jorge Lorenzo in the MotoGP race. Andrea Dovizioso was second. Ben Spies from Texas took his first career podium by passing fellow countryman Nicky Hayden for third in the closing stages of the race. In the championship, Lorenzo, who comes from the island of Mallorca, you grew up in Spain, you said. Did you ever go to Mallorca?
No.
What about a place called, what is the place, Alicante? Did you ever go to Alicante?
No, I did not.
Okay, sir, just checking.
I went to Malaga, Cadiz.
Ah, Cadiz. Nice place?
Exciting.
Wow, cool. Okay, Lorenzo is leading the championship with 115 points. Dovizioso from Italy is second on 78 points, and Danny Pedrosa of Viva España is third with 73 points. And with Rossi out, Valentino Rossi, I mean, Lorenzo and Pedrosa, especially Pedrosa, this is really their best chance to win the championship. I think there are more championships in store for Lorenzo. This kid is very quick. And there are a lot of rumors that Rossi may go to Ducati, being Italian and all that. And now they're even talking about Stoner going to Honda. So let's see what happens. Nicky Hayden was the highest place American in fifth place. I'm sorry, in the championship, he's the highest placed American in fifth with 52 points. Go to England, Croft. A big day for Philippine Motorsports as Marlon Stockinger took his first victory in Formula Renault. He's on the Neil Johnny program. One of the parents is Swiss, and the other is Filipino, but I think he's racing under the Filipino flag. So good for him, and our congratulations. Now we come to your favorite series in your favorite part of the world, Sears Point in Napa Wine Country. First right and left turns of the season for the boys. And it turned out to be a good race for drivers from the left coast. Did you watch any of this, sir?
I watched some of it, but I'm sorry. I just couldn't get in the mood.
Oh, wow. How about you, sir?
The entire time I was watching, they were under caution.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
A lot of cautions.
Yeah.
And not one tire fire.
Yeah. Okay, Jimmy Johnson from El Cajon near San Diego was the winner. Robbie Gordon from Orange County was second, and Kevin Harvick from Bakersfield, California was third. And Bakersfield is also the hometown of Rick Mears, but he now lives in Florida. I watched quite a bit of this race. A race should have been won by Marcus Ambrose of Australia. But while in the lead behind the pace car with few laps to go, I just could not believe when he was doing this. He started switching his engine on and off to save fuel, and that did it. When the engine hesitated to fire back, he was passed by some cars, and then what he does what I expect from Robbie Gordon or Paul Tracy. He regained his lost spot, but was told, very rightly so, by NASCAR officials, no can do. Once you know, it's like if you stall on the grid and everybody goes and you were on pole or second, you just cannot come back.
It's kind of like, dude, just put it in neutral.
Yeah.
That was a strange thing for him to do, but is that an old Super V8 trick or something?
Yeah, probably. But, this track has a lot of elevation changes, and this was just, I don't want to win this race, why don't you take it? I mean, yeah. I felt very bad for him, because it's very hard to win any race, and, for somebody like him with road racing background, as Montoya is finding out, it's very hard. It's very tough to win on ovals, even for Dale Earnhardt Jr. So this was pretty sad, but, these things happen. But this reminded me of Johnny Reed from New Zealand pulling into pit lane on the final lap as he thought the white flag meant race was over.
That's ridiculous.
That was a few years ago, and he's from New Zealand, like I said. But you live and learn.
That's beautiful.
Welcome to American racing.
How did Greg Biffle do?
He was there. He was looking for you.
Yeah, and how did Montoya do?
He was somewhere there. He was, interestingly, Matthias Ekstrom from Sweden was also one of the leaders. But then, they have these tire strategy, fuel strategy. I want a pure race, man. I don't like this fuel stop.
What about the couple
caution.
Of lucky dogs? Were there any lucky dogs?
There's always lucky dogs. Anytime there's a caution, if someone's lapped, they get to get up.
I'm just trying to figure it all out, Nasser.
Who's the lucky dog of F1 Weekly, you?
Yeah, exactly.
You are the top
now,
and the lucky dog.
Who's the points leader right now in NASCAR?
We pledged our listeners no more giggling on points, so we don't do points anymore.
Okay.
But now that you have brought up... I'm going to bring it up, check it out.
You can just at least just give us the standings. You don't have to tell us what their points total
are,
that's what was setting us off, was the points.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So we will do so next week.
Thank you, Ness.
Please forgive me.
I'm just
me.
Curious. I want to see where Biffle and Montoya stand within the championship.
Yes, we shall do that. Okay, now we go to Iowa. Will Power gave Team Penske 7th consecutive pole position in qualifying. Sato-san qualified 7th. TK, also known as Tony Kanaan, was the winner, his first win in 2 years. Castro Neves was second, and EJ Vizo was third, who used to be known as Ernesto Vizo. But I don't know why he changed his name when he came here. Ernesto is not too hard.
Right.
No, because he wants to go to NASCAR.
Now, do you think Tony Kanaan, after he won this race, called Rubinho?
Yeah, it's possible. It is possible. Okay, Will Power from Australia still leads the championship over Scott Dixon of New Zealand. We're shying away from points here also.
I can see that.
But next week it will be a numbers game.
Excellent. I'll bring my abacus.
Please. Indy Lights winner was Sebastian Saavedra of Colombia. And I've been following the career of this kid for a few years. Very quick. He has all the tendencies of or characteristics of fellow countryman Montoya. Quick. Little attitude adjustment required.
Matriculation.
Yeah. But he's quick, which is always very good. So I'm happy he got a win. And your homeboy, Jean-Carl Vernet, is still leading the championship with 192 points over Charlie Kimball, who is on 169 points. And we've interviewed Charlie a couple of times. His dad used to work for McLaren, Gordon Kimball, and Ferrari. So we wish all these people all the best. Formula 2000 race, which also was a supporting event, was won by Sage Karam, this young kid from Nazareth, Pennsylvania. And we have an interview with him coming up soon. This kid is very, very good. I've been following his career also for a few years. Now some news on J.J. Lehto. Ex-Grand Prix driver and Le Mans winner was involved in a boating accident early morning last Friday in the south of Finlandia. Lehto suffered head injuries and broken ribs. His friend was not so lucky and was killed in the accident when the boat hit a bridge support. Finlandia police will talk to Lehto after he is released from hospital. And this accident took place like around 4 in the morning. So probably it was dark there and they made a mistake. Mid-Ohio, win number 5 from 7 races this season for Scott. Hi to my family, Pruitt and Memo Rojas, in their BMW Powered Rally, which is entered by Ganassi Motorsports. Road America, talk about tire fire and turning right and left. Road America hosted a nationwide series, Turning Right and Left, and I believe this was their first trip there. Cousin Carl Edwards was the winner. Ron Fellows from Canada was second. And fellow Canadian JV, also known as Jacques Villeneuve, was 25th. Now we come to some, this was interesting. It's amazing what a little letter from lawyer will do. Now some beef and mutton with Jenson Button. The 2009 world champion had to file legal action before his former team handed over his prize for winning the 2009 world championship. Button had asked for an F1 car in return for taking a massive pay cut, which I'm sure you remember he did. But Mercedes refused to hand over a 2009 brown car to Button. So Jenson called Jacobi and Myers of London for enforcement of his contractual rights. And, you know, when lawyers talk, money walks. In this case, it was in the form of a brown GP car. You know, I always find it amazing in a situation like this, high-profile contracts, if the guy wins the championship and a car was promised, and you're going to hide behind that, oh, the team has changed names. That's not going to fly. I mean, you know, Force India is going through that thing also, unless it was specifically mentioned. But no, most of the time, you will end up in a legal situation. It's like, you know, firing a driver who has a rock, I mean, you know, watertight contract.
The contracts are binding with whoever. You know, changing the name doesn't alleviate the legality of the contract. It'd be kind of like me going, oh, I'm going to change my name so I don't have to make any more payments on my house.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good idea, Steve.
Yeah. What if you have a sex change?
Probably
because
still
the contract
no
will say a man.
My DNA is still the same.
What, you don't have to give your DNA when you apply for a loan at Green Tree Financial?
Yet.
Yeah, very true. That's an open line. Okay, now late news, some little updates from last week. Le Mans, Audi's victory set a new record of distance covered, beating the old record from 1971 held by Dutch driver Hees van Lennep, and we interviewed him some years ago at Laguna Seca.
One of my favorite interviews.
Why is that?
Because Hees van Lennep is just a great, hilarious dude.
Yeah, it was fun talking to him. And his teammate at that time was Dr. Helmut Marko in their Porsche, and of course Dr. Helmut Marko is the big cheese at Red Bull. Chief pilot at Red Bull, I should say. Montreal, McLaren's double the pleasure came in the same territory as the team's first ever 1-2 way back in 1968 when Denny Hulme beat team leader Bruce McLaren at Mont Tremblant in Saint-Jovit, a super lay beautiful track. You know, of course, I've heard of this track many, many times over the decades, but some years ago when the Champ Cars raced there and I saw the race on TV, I just could not believe how beautiful this location is. And it is on par with the beautiful Österreichring, the old Austrian track. And talking of Mont Tremblant, you know the person who owns this track now is the father of this young Canadian karting kid who was signed to the Ferrari driver development program. Apparently he's as rich as you are. Maybe not as rich, but in the same league as you are. He also has interest in a Ferrari dealership in Canada. So, things are happening there. Okay, back to the future. Casey and the Sunshine Band. Karun Chanduk is hoping to drive for Force India next year. His papito Vicky and Dr. Vijay Mallya are both big fish in Indian Motorsports Federation and also long-time friends. And of course, there will be a Indian Grand Prix coming up soon, which I hope and plan to attend.
Wow, there's going to be great food at that Grand Prix.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And talking of food, no confirmation of rumors that the team will be renamed Scuderia Curry in a Hurry. But a friend of mine from San Diego, one of our listeners, Mr. Robert Schwartz, he is also interested in going to the Indian Grand Prix. It will be in New Delhi. It will be, I've never been
there.
That'll
be exciting. You should try to find an Irish pub and have a F1 Weekly listeners meeting.
Yeah, it's possible. And, I have a friend, I talk to him on email, on the web all the time. He's a huge Formula One fan from the 70s, 80s, and very passionate about it. So it'll be nice to hook up there and have some local expertise, which is always appreciated. Okay, BMW may get involved in FIA GT1 Championship next season. Toyota is in the news quite a bit. Pirelli has been confirmed. I'm sure you brought that up.
Yeah, we mentioned it once or twice.
Once or twice only? Okay, Pirelli is going to use, according to some reports, Toyota cars, so other teams don't complain. You're testing with Williams and they're getting, all the data and feedback. So, which is interesting. And plus, ProDrive may get involved in rallying with Toyota. And rallying is how they got big in motorsports worldwide. They set up a shop in Belgium, Toyota Team Europe with Ove Anderson. And then it morphed into the Cologne operation, the Cologne Kingdom. So let's see. GP2, starting next year, all teams will have to compete in GP2 Asia also, which was a rumor I heard from reliable sources a few weeks ago. A current GP2 car will be updated rather than replaced to reduce cost. GP3 news, last Friday at Ricardo Tormo's circuit in Valencia, Esteban Gutierrez of Mexico set the fastest time in testing. Robert Wickens of Canada was second. American driver Alexander Rossi was eighth. And these three are the amigos and favorites for this year's title. I will be like, I even told Miss Amanda Hunt of GP3, if one of these three do not win, I'll be like super shocked and shame on all of them, because they are very talented, very good, and they should be able to put it together. And of course, they will be racing this weekend in the streets of Valencia, and so will be Formula BMW, GP2, and Formula Uno. What happened to Nando last year? In the home race, tell me now.
Let's leave Fernando alone.
Okay, let's talk about Romain Grosjean, his ex-teammate. He will race for Dams in AutoGP competition, which used to be the European Formula 3000 series or something like that. And of course, he's trying to get back in Formula 1. I would really like to see him get a fair shot in Formula 1 with a reasonable team. And now we come to our newest segment. Hopefully we'll do it every month. Rubalism. I'm a loser, and I love someone who's near to me. I'm a loser, I am not what I appear to be. His motorsport mantra is better red than dead. And of course he's referring to such fine reds as 156, 126, and 312s. Do I need to tell you what they are?
Scuderia.
Certamente, senor. Dr. Rubel is an F1 junkie from the days of Bandini and Scarfiotti. He is now a reporter at large for his favorite podcast, and this is the first report he has filed from his somewhere in Sacramento location. This is called Most Failures to Qualify. Some of us will remember when there was pre-qualifying to get on the F1 grid for Sunday. Now the 107 rule is coming back in 2011, and we may see some sorry faces on Saturday. What do you think of the 107% rule coming back?
Oh, I think it's good, but to be honest with you, I don't think it's going to be a big impact as we might think it may be, because I think all the new teams will be able to qualify within the 100.
Plus, I think the new team should get a first-year exemption so they can catch up to Steve with no testing.
Yeah, no first-year exemptions, but... I think most of them will have no problem getting in.
Okay, so most failures to qualify. Driver leading this dubious category is Gabriele Tarquini, who attempted to race in Formula 1 from 1987 to 1995 with such leading lights as Osella, Coloni, AGS, and Fondmetal. from the 77 Grand Prix he entered, he failed to qualify in 40. But at least he tried.
I was going to say, at least he's persistent.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you got to try and, you know, it's easy to... We're not making fun, we're just reporting facts, okay? And, of course, you put Michael Schumacher and Fon Metal and Ayrton Senna in a Coloni and Jim Clark in Osella. Not much will happen in terms of victories. Fair to say that?
Very fair.
Okay, sir. Next, Bertrand Gachot, man who did more for Michael Schumacher than Willy Weber. He is second on the list with 37 DNQs from 84 Grand Prix entered. He went from a Stone Temple pilot for Onyx to F1 drowning with Pacific. Do you remember Pacific team? And in between, he sprayed mace on a taxi driver, which gave Shuey a ride in F1. Rest is history, and so was Gachot and his F1 career. It's like Bell, Biff, DeVoe, now you know. Okay, next is Roberto Moreno. Pupo went Pupo. Pupo, I'm sure you know, is his nickname.
Yes.
And the Super Sub went submerged in 32 of the 75 Grand Prix entered. Teams included AGS, Coloni, see, misery loves company, Euro Brun 40, and Andrea Moda. I guess the shoe did not fit. The top 10 is completed by Piercarlo Genzani, Arturo Mazzario, the Italian cowboy who dragged Niki Lauda out of his flaming Ferrari at Nürburgring, and there were some other drivers also involved, Bernd Schneider, Yannick Dalmas, and we have an interview with Yannick Dalmas also coming up soon, Stefan Johansson, now playing Willy Weber to Scott Dixon in Indy Racing, Eric van der Poel, and Nicola Larini. Next month, we will receive more dose of Rubelism from Dr. Rubel, and we will explain gladly. Finally, famous last words from Martin Brundle at the Canadian Grand Prix. I quote, "You have to treat the back of Schumacher's car like the back of a donkey." When asked to comment, Schumacher only said, "What a jackass." Thank you, Mr. David Tapia, for being F1 Weekly's Beast of Burden.
Thank you, Nasser, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. But, of course, we have a goodie bag.
But wait, there's more.
Exactly. And I want you to introduce this new up-and-coming young driver in GP3.
This conversation, sir, is with Paul Warhaug. Paul Warhaug is a young man in a hurry from Norway. Remember that song, Take On Me?
One of my favorite songs.
Yeah, as always, Aha. So Paul Warhaug is going, Aha. This year he is competing in the new GP3 series and in Barcelona became the first ever winner of the series in style from front row. This was very good. He etched his name in motorsports history.
That's how you do it.
Absolutely, sir. Previously, he raced in Formula Master in 2009 against Alexander Rossi and also this Swiss driver we interviewed recently, Fabio Laimer. And in 2008, Paul Warhaug won the Formula Renault Italy Championship, which is good, and he's very proud of that achievement, as he should be. And this is interesting. He should really come to California. I was looking at his website. His favorite food is taco, so he will be a happy camper in California. And when he comes here, his first fully loaded taco will be on the House of F1 Weekly.
But there's no S. It just says taco, singular. There's no such...
That's the advice of his nutritionist.
His nutritionist?
Yeah.
His physio.
Physio, yeah, exactly.
It's like potato chips. You can't eat just wood.
Yeah. So I would like to thank Mr. Warhaug for his time. And I also enjoyed meeting his trainer. He was there with him, and he looks like the real Viking warrior. And also thanks to Miss Amanda Hunt of GP3 Media for her cooperation in gaining access to GP3 paddock and drivers. So please enjoy the conversation and visit Paul Warhaug's website for more info on his exciting career. And his name is spelled P-A-L-V-A-R-H-A-U-G. Thank you. Okay, folks, I'm here with the winner of the very first race in history of the new GP3 series, Paul Warhaug. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. I'm really great, and I'm really happy for the win yesterday. I came a bit, wasn't expecting to win this first race, and I just did it, and it was great.
And you did it in style. You had a great start and then you were gone. Like you said, you were not expecting it. Were you surprised when you took the lead and then saw Wickens and Esteban Gutierrez just battle among themselves for second?
Yeah, I knew that my car wasn't the fastest. And when I came off to the start, I was sure not sure that I would just carry on. But then I see that my pace was good and then I just had to do my race good and save a bit of tires in the beginning, and that's what I did. And in the end, I got to pull off from the others, and yeah, it was a very good race for me.
Now, the race was yesterday, Saturday, and when you got up this morning, was the man in the mirror still smiling?
Yeah, it's always smiling.
Very good. How is the GP? How do you like the GP3 car compared to the Formula Master car you drove last year?
It's a very good car to this car. The sound on the engine is a bit. It's the only thing that I don't like, because it's a very. It's not so good sound, but because of the turbo. But it's a very good car to drive. I learn a lot to go up in the GP2 car, and yeah, it's a very nice car to drive.
Okay, you are from Norway. How popular is motor racing in Norway?
In Norway, it's not so popular. If it's motor racing, it's rally. So Formula cars and Formula One and this is not really a big thing in Norway. But it's getting more and more popular all the time. And now when I am competing in this good and high level, then it's getting more interest all the time in Norway. So. But I'm really hoping that the Norwegians are now starting to look at me and can maybe come with some sponsors to me, because now I have a bit problem to find the sponsors. So, yeah, I couldn't hope for anything better the first race.
What is the game plan for race two? We have a reverse grid. You'll be starting eighth now. Do you want to win again and impress everybody, or you just want to make sure you get as many points as you can? What is called cruise and collect?
Well, to win is very difficult, because it's to start from a P8 is very difficult. I have to get a very good start then. But sure, I will try to do my best to get a good start, to carry on, pass people, just have some fun and do a good race in the end. And then I see where I finish.
So I was looking at your website and I saw you were in some fashion show, also looking pretty, you know, rock and roll. When can we expect you on the cover of GQ?
Yeah. This fashion show was a bit crazy. I never done thing like this, and it was fun, and I got some money off and clothes off from it. So yeah, it was just good.
Will you please tell our listeners how old are you and how long you've been racing?
I am 19 and I've been racing since I've been 5 years old. Then I started karting, and I just built up my career until now.
And is karting popular? Do you have a lot of what part of Norway are you from also?
Stavanger is the. It's close to Stavanger. It's the one place called Ålgård. This is like southwest in Norway. So.
And how is karting? You have a lot of karting tracks there. Is it very popular, like in Finlandia?
What?
Karting, is it very popular in your country, like in Finland?
No, karting is not so very popular. Yeah, it is. There's some people drive karting. It's a lot of people, but it's not like in Finland that is very, very popular, and the other country, like Sweden, also is very popular, and yeah, it's not like that. It's in Norway, it's more like football and this sport, kind of sports that is very popular.
Okay, victory in GP3 yesterday was fantastic, very impressive. Apart from this win, what has been your biggest success in motorsport so far that you are proud of?
When I became the Italian champion in Formula Renault, for sure. This is my biggest moment before this one.
How many languages do you speak?
Only English and Norwegian.
And no Italian?
No, I can some words. Also in Swiss German I can some words, but I cannot speak it fluently.
Okay. Finally, will you please tell our listeners a little bit about Paul Warthog, the man, young man, not the driver, what kind of music you like, how you like to spend your non-racing time?
Yeah, I like the music I like is like metal and hard style and hip hop. This is the music I like, and what I do like to do in my spare time, I like to be with friends, play on my computer, play football, and do some sports. Yeah, just have a lot of fun.
Okay, I wish you all the best in your race today.
Thank you very much. All the best. Okay.
Paul Valhog, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right to the wrap up with the forum updates.
The forum updates for the 24th of June. It has been a busy time on the forum since the last forum update. Montreal has come and gone, and Valencia is around the corner. The forum prediction competition continues. The McLaren 1-2 at Montreal mixed up the results a little. Lap traffic won this week with 142 points, followed close by Chemex on 139, and an uncharacteristically good result for Tricky Dick with a 137, which was such a shock that some forum members questioned when he actually submitted his entry. Starfleet 76 is on 931, leading the competition ahead of Cyan at 901. Sarcasm at 897 and Lion Bray at 886. And for those who are interested, Steve is running an equal seventh at 869. There was a great deal of discussion, as would be expected, in regards to the Montreal race. Forum members generally enjoyed the race, concluding it was one of the best so far this year. Some topics arising from the Montreal race: the size of the podium and how uncomfortable the drivers looked. Nicole carrying around a 2-year-old all weekend. Watch out, Hammy. She might be getting clucky. Is Vettel turning into a diva? Schumacher myths. Various stats highlighted by Ye. Did you know it was the first time in 19 years that positions 1, 2, and 3 were all former world champions? Clark's trip to the Grand Prix, especially the picture of him with 5 pit babes, and the fact that no one seems to remember what happened at the F1 Weekly meetup. Hamilton's use of tires, various predictions from the latest edition of Autosports Portugal via Miguel, Petrov's continued lack of performance. The countryside thread was as active as ever, with Sihi Sin providing us with extensive pictorial travelogue of his holiday, and in particular his visit to Clark's brothers Daniel's B&B in France, while Tricky once again bemoaned the fall of the British Empire. Tricky also, one of our more active forum members, has announced that he is again heading overseas for work for quite a few months, and because of internet access difficulties, will only be able to post irregularly. We wish you a safe and healthy trip, Tricky. Keep your head down, Tricky. Keep up the good work. Thanks for the forum updates.
Thank Koala. Outstanding job. And, of course, everybody's taking their turn to write the forum updates. And if you haven't been on the forum, you're missing out on a lot of laughs. Quickly, the San Francisco Formula One group is getting together this Sunday. You can check out their website, sff1.com. It's going to be Sunday, June 27th, 8:30 a.m. Flag drops at 9 a.m. at the Go-Kart Racer in beautiful downtown Burlingame. And you can check them out there at 1541 Adrian Road, real close to the San Francisco International Airport. So there you go, San Francisco Formula One group, always having lots of activities. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact Cameron Karting at CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our Facebook and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website, simply contact me or anyone else here at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, recording and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.